Just finished studying the letter of 1 Timothy. We're studying the letters to Timothy and Titus this quarter. Just finished 1 Timothy on Sunday morning and trying to take these in what appears to be chronological order. We're going to talk about the letter to Titus next, and then we'll save 2 Timothy for last. So we're going to talk a little bit about Paul and Titus and their relationship and their history. Some of the background information for Paul's writing Titus this letter that we're going to be getting into. So we're going to look at a little bit in the book of Titus and a few other passages as well, talk about that a little bit. We did this with Paul and Timothy in our very first lesson this quarter. The difference here is that we know a lot more about Timothy's background and his history with Paul than we do regarding Titus. So let's talk about that a little bit. Talk about Paul and Titus and see what we can piece together from the New Testament narrative and from Paul's letters. The interesting thing is Titus's name is not mentioned anywhere in the book of Acts. Paul's writings, however, show us that Titus was with Paul, was ministering, working alongside Paul or at his direction in several aspects and several periods of time during Paul's ministry. He's there. It's just curious that Luke doesn't mention him. Of course, Luke doesn't mention Timothy a great deal, but he does mention him in several settings. And when we talked about that in our very first lesson, we looked at a number of settings where Timothy is either specifically mentioned or it's pretty certain that he was there and was involved in the activities. With Titus, it's a little bit different. Why does Luke choose not to mention Titus? We don't know. There's been some speculation as a result of that maybe there was some family relation there. Luke doesn't mention himself either by name, even though we know he is with Paul a good deal of the book of Acts when the narrative in Acts switches from they did this to we did this. Luke is writing as an eyewitness. John does something similar in the Gospel of John. He never mentions himself by name. And some have speculated that maybe Luke doesn't mention Titus because they were some kind of family relations. The speculation is that Titus was Luke's brother. And that's all it is speculation as far as I can tell. There's not really any solid basis to say that. But it is a curious feature of the book of Acts that Titus, who is pretty active in Paul's ministry, doesn't have his name mentioned. But we are going to talk a little bit about what we do know about Titus. You're going to see there's a lot of things we don't know, but some that we do. Galatians 2 and verse 3, we'll be coming back to Galatians 2 in a little while, tells us that Titus was from a Gentile background. Paul uses the term Greek to describe him, as is pretty common in the New Testament documents. But he's from a Gentile background. You remember what Timothy's background was, his family heritage? Okay, yeah, his father was a Greek, a Gentile. His mother was Jewish. In Titus, not the case. Not that mixed heritage. Titus is a Gentile convert. That's going to come into play in a couple of the things we talk about tonight. It's going to be a factor in one of the differences between what Paul does regarding Timothy and what he does regarding Titus. We'll talk about that a little bit. Where he was from, who his family was, we don't have any idea. There have been some educated guesses that maybe Titus was a native of Antioch in Syria because that's the first place that we can draw by implication that he is found with Paul. We have him traveling from there or at least probably from there, down to Jerusalem with Paul. More on that in a minute, but we just don't know. We don't know. Timothy, we find out in the letters to Timothy, his mother's name, his grandmother's name. We know his mother was Jewish. Got some pretty good guesses as to where Timothy was from, although those are not certain. With Titus, we know considerably less. So we just have to be content with that. He's likely converted by Paul because much like Timothy, Paul refers to him as his son. not his literal son, but his son in the faith. And is that may indicate that Titus had been converted by Paul, although when and where that would have happened, we can only guess. So it's profoundly dissatisfying so far, isn't it? We just don't know much about him. He's a Gentile convert. He's a young individual. We're able to piece that much together. And what we're going to see is that Paul has great confidence in Titus. That some of the things that we do read about Titus being involved in are very, very important things that it's hard to imagine Paul would have entrusted them to just anyone. So we'll talk about that a little bit. If you're following along in your lesson book, we're going to kind of try to take these questions more or less in order as we look at Titus's life. So let's talk about some of the things that we do know about Titus's activities and his history with Paul. Galatians chapter 2. You want to be turning there, we're going to look at a couple of things here. So here's what Paul says beginning in Galatians 2, starting in verse 1. And he's been talking in the Galatian letter about his own history, about his ministry and apostleship, particularly emphasizing the fact that the gospel he preached was not something that he learned from somebody else or picked up, from some other source. He gets it directly from God. Chapter 2, verse 1, after he's talking about some of these things, then after an interval of 14 years, I went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas, taking Titus along also. It was because of a revelation that I went up, and I submitted to them the gospel which I preach among the Gentiles, but I did so in private to those who were of reputation, for fear that I might be running or had run in vain. But not even Titus, who was with me, though he was a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised, but it was because of the false brethren secretly brought in who had sneaked in to spy out our liberty which we have in Christ Jesus in order to bring us into bondage. But we did not yield in subjection to them for even an hour so that the truth of the gospel would remain with you. So the first thing we encounter in that text is Titus making a trip with Paul and Barnabas to Jerusalem. Paul is not specific about some of the things about this trip, but we do know, we read about him in Acts making multiple trips to Jerusalem during his career. Which one would this best match? I'll just tell you what I think. I think it's kind of the majority opinion on this, but that doesn't necessarily make it correct. But I think this most closely matches what Paul describes in, or what Luke describes rather, in Acts chapter 15. Remember, Paul is preaching in Antioch of Syria, and it's the first predominantly Gentile congregation that is established there. Luke writes about, I'm going to say that a lot, I'm going to make that mistake a lot, so just be prepared for it. Luke writes in Acts about people from Jerusalem, Jewish Christians from Jerusalem, arriving in Antioch and telling these Gentile converts, you remember what they were telling them? Some of you Acts scholars, yeah. They had to be circumcised and keep the law of Moses in order to be saved. That's, you see the potential trouble here? It's huge. Here are these Gentile converts who have no background whatsoever in the law of Moses. They have become Christians, and now all of a sudden, some of their brothers from down in Jewish territory have come up and are telling them, "Look, you can't just be a Gentile Christian. You got to be a Jewish Christian." I'm sure they didn't say it that way. They said, "You've got to keep the law of Moses in order to be saved, even in Christ." The dispute is such, the seriousness of the issue is such, that in chapter 15, Paul and Barnabas go down to Jerusalem. They use the expression up because you always went up to Jerusalem because of the elevation. They go down south to Jerusalem from Antioch in Syria, and they meet with the apostles and the elders of the church there. There's this discussion that we read about in Acts chapter 15, not for the purpose of Paul and the other apostles hammering out an agreement, but for them to show the rest of the Christians that they are in agreement about this issue. And of course, what was their conclusion? Did the Gentile Christians have to be circumcised and keep the law or not? No, it had nothing to do with them. You see the potential for serious division in a case like this. I mean, that's going to affect what people believe about salvation. It's going to affect what they believe about fellowship, about their association together. This has the potential to do a lot of damage. And they even send out a letter to the Gentile Christians in other places, reassuring them, you don't have to. These men do not speak with any authority from us, the ones that are disturbing you in this way and so forth. Okay, well, what's Titus's involvement in all of that? If indeed Galatians 2 is describing the same occasion, okay, I'm just going to operate on that assumption for a minute. If indeed Galatians 2 is describing the same occasion that Luke writes about in Acts chapter 15, here's Titus, who comes with Paul and Barnabas to Jerusalem, and he is exhibit A of the controversy. He's a Gentile Christian. How long he's been a Christian, I don't know. But here's this young man who's a Gentile convert, the very kind of person that some of these folks who Luke describes as primarily having come out of the sect of the Pharisees are saying, he's got to obey the law of Moses in order to be saved. He's got to be circumcised and keep the law. So what does Paul say about that here in Galatians 2? Did he say, okay, well, Titus needs to be circumcised? Now, he's adamant about it here in Galatians 2. Look at it again in verse 3, not even Titus, who was with me, though he was a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised. Okay. And I think the gist of Paul's wording there in verse 3 is that the other apostles, like Paul, had no interest in compelling Titus to be circumcised. It's not just Paul that felt this way. He says this issue arose, verse 4, because of false brethren secretly brought in to spy out our liberty, which we have. And he says, verse 5, we didn't yield in subjection to them even for an hour. We didn't budge on this. And of course, when you look at the discussion that takes place in Acts chapter 15, Paul and Barnabas speak, Peter speaks, James, the brother of Jesus, speaks, and they all speak with one voice. They speak from... they reason from different places. Paul and Barnabas talk about the things that God had been doing through them among the Gentiles in their ministry to Gentiles. Loads of Gentiles being converted, none of them being required to be circumcised or keep the law. Peter reasoned from his experiences with Cornelius, what is evidently the very first Gentile conversion, back in Acts chapter 10. And he talks eloquently about that. James reasons from the prophets and says this is what God always said would happen. And Paul, again, in Galatians 2, I think probably is talking about the very same set of circumstances, and Titus accompanies him with that. Titus's presence there, it ends up being rather important. It's interesting, a lot of commentators keep using the same expression. They use the word test case when they talk about Titus in connection with the events of Acts chapter 15 or the things that Paul's describing here in Galatians chapter 2. And what Titus's example showed was, no, the Gentiles don't have to be circumcised and keep the law of Moses. Questions or comments up to this point? Don't let me do all the talking tonight.
It seemed like that they just wanted to pick on one thing of the law of Moses, circumcision.
Yeah.
They didn't say anything about keeping any of the other sacrifices or any other part of the law.
Yeah, I think a lot of the other aspects of the law were implied, but it's curious that that's the thing that, you know, that gets the most emphasis. I think probably because that's the outward token, you know, that was standard for Jewish males to say, "Hey, I'm Jewish." And of course, it was a sign of the covenant with Abraham. And it's interesting that Paul launches right after that into talking about who are the real descendants of Abraham. What does it really mean to be Abraham's heir? And in the rest of Galatians, it doesn't have anything to do with physical circumcision. But yeah, the rest of there are other aspects of the law. Some of those things are dealt with, but yeah, not as conspicuously anyway. So this all takes place around AD 49, maybe AD 50, when these events in Acts chapter 15 take place. And Titus is present with Paul in Jerusalem while all of that's going on. He is kind of at the center of all of that in a way. The next time that we encounter Titus in the New Testament text, I guess I need to ask this question. I don't want to blow right past it. This question number four in your workbook, we've already kind of answered it, but you may remember back in Acts chapter 16, when Paul took Timothy with him on some missionary journeys, he saw to it that Timothy was circumcised. Why didn't he do that with Titus?
Titus was to minister to the Gentiles.
Okay. That's part of it. Okay. Okay, he wasn't compelled to do it. Go ahead. Yeah.
Timothy, part Jewish.
And yeah.
They didn't want to be a stumbling.
Yeah, that's really what I should have asked is why did he do it with Timothy and not with Titus? Yeah. Timothy's background is part Jewish. The Jews, in many places where they would have recognized that, and his being uncircumcised could have been a roadblock to effective ministry among those people. Titus is all Gentile, and to circumcise him would be, I'm sorry to say, pointless. It'd be worse than pointless in view of the events of Acts chapter 15. Paul says, we're not going to do that. In neither of their cases did it have anything to do with their salvation. It was a matter of expediency and like we talked about Sunday, trying not to give offense, trying not to create unnecessary stumbling blocks in the ministry of, in this case, Timothy. Titus, those factors don't enter into it with him because he's entirely of Gentile parentage. Lamar? You mean Timothy? But yeah. Yeah. Certainly would have had more access to predominantly Jewish spaces. Yeah, Timothy would have. Part of the key difference between these two. This is one moment in the narrative where we encounter Titus specifically. And you notice we have to reconstruct it from not the book of Acts, but from Galatians chapter 2 and its connection to the book of Acts to place Titus in that place and that time. The next time we encounter Titus is a few years later. It's on Paul's third missionary journey. If you were really sharp and paying attention back last summer when we studied 2 Corinthians, you'll remember some of these references we're going to talk about. So Paul is in Ephesus on his third preaching journey. This is somewhere between AD, say, 54, 57, along in there. He spends, of course, these 3 years in Ephesus. While he is at Ephesus, he writes the letter we know as 1 Corinthians. And after writing that, at some point he sends Titus to Corinth to check on the welfare of the brethren there, to admonish them, especially in light of some of the really difficult things he had to say in 1 Corinthians, and to bring a report back on their situation, their progress. Many commentators and scholars think that that perhaps Paul wrote yet another letter to the Corinthians in the interim that is lost to us, that was even more direct and harsh than 1 Corinthians is, and that in light of some of the things there coupled with 1 Corinthians, Paul was really concerned about how all this was going to be received. That's inference. We don't know that for sure. But what we do know is the things Paul had communicated to the Corinthians already, even if you just took 1 Corinthians, it's pretty direct regarding some changes they need to make. Paul was concerned about how they were going to respond to that. There is also the issue of the collection for the needy saints in Judea that Paul has raised with the Corinthians. He mentions that toward the end of 1 Corinthians. As we're going to see, Titus is instrumental in helping them and encouraging them in that effort. So while Paul is at Ephesus, he sends Titus at least once to Corinth. It may have happened, there may have been multiple trips, or more than one anyway. In 2 Corinthians, in chapter 7, in chapter 8, chapter 12, Paul talks about this. And as we try to reconstruct what Paul says about Titus and his sending him to Corinth, evidently they had arranged to meet perhaps at Troas. Paul, after leaving Ephesus, went to Troas and didn't find Titus there. And he writes in 2 Corinthians about how anxious he was to hear the news about the Corinthians, so much so that he says he passed up an open door in Troas, passed up an opportunity to preach there in order to go find Titus and find out directly from him what was going on at Corinth. And they finally meet in Macedonia. Titus gives him the news of the Corinthian situation, upon which Paul writes the letter we know as 2 Corinthians. He talks about that in 2 Corinthians 7. In fact, let's flip over there and look at it for a minute. 2 Corinthians 7, just to give you the kind of the flavor of this. Second Corinthians 7, starting in verse 5. For even when we came into Macedonia, our flesh had no rest, but we were afflicted on every side, conflicts without, fears within. But God, who comforts the depressed, comforted us by the coming of Titus. And not only by his coming, but also by the comfort with which he was comforted by you, as he reported to us your longing, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoiced even more. There's a question I would ask about that. If Paul picks you and says he's in Ephesus in the middle of this really important ministry, not just in Ephesus, but throughout the province of Asia, the gospel is being preached. He is really concerned about those brothers and sisters in Corinth, over on the other side of that little part of the sea there. He's preached there. He has learned about problems there. He's written to those people. And now he's concerned about how they're going to respond to his instruction to them. And he says to you, I want you to go to Corinth, encourage them, see how they're doing, come back and report to me how they're doing. You think Paul has a lot of confidence in Titus to ask him to do that? Is he going to pick just anybody to do that? That gives us some little glimpse into the measure of confidence and trust that Paul has in this young man. And he's not done, because what we see a little bit later in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 is that Paul's planning to send Titus back to Corinth with some others so that he can help them especially so that he can help them in completing their task of raising that collection for the needy saints in Judea. Other Gentile, predominantly Gentile churches are doing likewise. And all that's in preparation for Paul actually coming there and organizing the transport of that gift back to Jerusalem. Remember, they can't stick it in the mail. So you know, somebody's got to accompany their gift back. And Titus, again, is given a key role in this. It seems he's developed something of a rapport with the Corinthians. There's a relationship there that Paul uses for the advantage of the progress of the gospel and the meeting of the needs of these needy saints. That gives, you know, even though these are really limited glimpses into Titus's career, in Titus's background with Paul, they show us a lot about Titus the person and about Paul's relationship with him. Okay, questions, comments, anything? Y'all are a quiet bunch tonight. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Yep. Oh, is that it? Okay, all right. Okay. Paul mentions Titus about nine times in the 2 Corinthian letter. And given all the things that he's writing to the Corinthians, all the very personal things he's talking about, that says something. And again, we've seen Paul's statements help us reconstruct something of Titus's activities during Paul's ministry, especially during his third preaching journey. Acts 19 in verse 22 indicates that at some point Timothy was with Paul in Ephesus. Either he traveled with him there or he met him there. We talked about this in our very first lesson. And now we learn in 2 Corinthians that the same thing was true of Titus. He had either accompanied Paul on this journey to Ephesus or had come from somewhere else and met him. And the most likely inference is that he was just traveling with Paul there. But Paul sends him on this extended, very important side trips to Corinth in all of this. And then, in the book of, as far as our connection to the book of Acts, we don't know what Titus is up to. When we look at the events from Acts 20 to Acts 28, which is about 5 years or so, we don't know either from Acts or from Paul's other writings, so at least so far as I can tell, we don't know where Titus was or what he was doing. I suspect what he was doing was preaching the gospel, but we don't know anything specific about his travels. For example, the last place we saw Titus was Paul sends him to Corinth to help them complete their collection for the saints, to reinforce the things that Paul had taught them, to get them ready for Paul's arrival. And of course, in Acts chapter 20, we read about Paul accompanied by representatives of a number of churches in Macedonia and other places, heading back toward Jerusalem. That's the return trip, Acts 20, Acts 21. Presumably with this gift. Titus's name doesn't appear on the list. That doesn't necessarily mean he wasn't there, but we just don't know. Did he accompany Paul back to Jerusalem? What was Titus doing during the time that Paul was arrested in Jerusalem and the time he was in custody, in the custody of the governor in Caesarea, when he was traveling to Rome, when he was under house arrest in Rome? That takes us to the end of the book of Acts. What's Titus's locale? What's he doing during all of that? Bible just doesn't tell us. I wish it did, but it doesn't. So we've got a pretty big gap there. And the next time really that we encounter Titus chronologically is when Paul writes him a letter. Around maybe 63 AD, presumably we've got a series of events that we want to talk about. We talked about this in our very first lesson. Just want to go over these again. Trying to reconstruct the events of Paul's ministry after the end of the book of Acts. The reason we say, the reason we need to do this is because there are references in Paul's writings, particularly in Timothy and Titus, to travels of Paul that are, it's very hard to make them fit into the timeline and events of Acts. So generally, the conclusion has been, and there's a lot of early Christian writings, or at least some early Christian writings, I think that suggest this as well, that at the end of that 2-year confinement in Rome, where the book of Acts ends, Paul was released. He visits churches in, among other places, Asia Minor. He leaves Timothy at Ephesus, as we saw, and he leaves Titus on the island of Crete. This raises a question. When were these churches on the island of Crete established? We don't know that either. Somebody's going to ask you tonight, what did you learn in Bible class tonight? We don't know. Not very much. We don't know when these congregations were established. The only time in the book of Acts that Paul spends any time on Crete is a brief stopover on a sea voyage that probably doesn't leave him enough time to do the kind of preaching that we're talking about here. Did Paul establish these churches after his release from Roman confinement? Or did somebody else establish these churches? Remember, Paul's not the only one preaching the gospel out there. So we're not sure about that. What seems to be seems evident is that these churches on the island of Crete do not have as much history as the Ephesian church did that Timothy was working with. These are newer Christians, newer churches anyway. Paul at some point leaves Titus and Timothy at Ephesus, Titus on Crete, visits churches in Macedonia. From there he writes Timothy, 1 Timothy, and the letter of Titus, say around AD 63 or so. And then he continues his preaching, travels in Romans 15. He even talked about his desire to go as far as Spain. That's kind of the extremity of the West as far as the Roman Empire is concerned. Maybe he even got to do that. And at some point somewhere, Paul is arrested and imprisoned again in Rome. We can only speculate about some of the circumstances of that. And every tradition we have says that he was eventually executed there. From that imprisonment, he writes 2 Timothy. When we get to 2 Timothy, you're going to see the big difference between 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy is going to be the circumstances in which Paul wrote it. When he writes 1 Timothy, he's a free man, he's busy preaching. When he writes 2 Timothy, he's in prison and he doesn't expect to get out, not alive. Of course, Paul sees that as a win. He talks about the Lord bringing him safely to his heavenly kingdom. Safely? Paul, you're going to be executed. Yeah, that's all right. That's how Paul sees it. But that's going to be a big difference in 2 Timothy versus 1 Timothy or Titus. Data indicates probably Paul's executed in Rome AD 66 or 7. I realize there's a lot of probabilities in trying to reconstruct this. But it helps us, I think, get some idea of the background of 1 Timothy and Titus and 2 Timothy as we're studying those things. Again, we talked about all this in our very first lesson, but that was a few weeks ago, so won't hurt to talk about it again. All right, questions or comments before we actually talk a little bit about the letter to Titus? So Titus is on the island of Crete, and Paul speaks in terms not of one church there, but of several. And you will notice that what he instructs Titus is a lot like what he wrote to Timothy in 1 Timothy. Does that surprise anybody? It shouldn't. You know, young evangelist working with these churches, you know, it's not going to be radically different. One of the first things Paul will talk about, in fact, in Titus chapter 1, is the need to appoint leadership in these churches. He says, that's part of the reason I left you there, to appoint elders in all the churches. Well, he writes to Timothy about appointing elders. Now, the Ephesian church, at least at one point before Timothy got there, had an eldership. But we looked at some problems that had arisen in the Ephesian church, problems that Paul foretold that may have involved at least some of the leadership there. So there's a need for Timothy to keep on emphasizing the appointment of godly overseers in the church at Ephesus. For Titus, he's working with newer congregations. This, you know, this is going to be a new thing for them. And of course, anytime we talk about the appointment of elders, or talk about the qualifications of elders, we end up comparing 1 Timothy 3 and Titus chapter 1. And it shouldn't surprise us that Paul lays down the same kind of character and the same kinds of kinds of abilities in these men, in both of those chapters. And he's going to talk to Titus also about his interaction with and his teaching of people, Christians, in many different areas of life. Chapter 2, Paul covers a lot of ground, talking about some particular things to be emphasized: older women, older men, younger women, younger men, servants, you know, just, you know, much as he did with Timothy, in a little bit more brief kind of fashion. Philip Towner had this to say about the letter to Titus. If I can get to it. He said, "Much of the letter encourages ordinary believers who occupy all walks of life to consider their lives in every facet as an expression of the will of God." Now, that's not to say Paul doesn't do this in 1 Timothy or other places, but it's really evident in Titus. "In fact, once life is considered this way, the thought of ordinariness departs from Christian thinking about life. No matter what path God has given us to walk, we are intended to be a vital piece in God's missionary plan to reach the rest of the world." And then he goes on, I don't have this on the screen, "each piece has meaning. Each human life has inestimable value and usefulness to God. And this realization is a tremendous source of joy, satisfaction, and peace." That's going to be evident in Titus, that a lot of what Paul is concerned with is not just Titus's work as a preacher, but what he is encouraging other Christians to do, what kind of lives he's encouraging them to live. The phrase "good works" comes up a number of times in Titus. Paul is very concerned, and uses that kind of general expression, in that Titus teach the people he's working with, the Christians he's working with, to do what's right. And that he teach unbelievers, you know, as he's bringing them to Christ, they've got to change the way they live. They've got to do good works. So watch for that expression. It appears a number of times in this little letter to Titus. Just three chapters, three very, really fairly short chapters, which means it's not going to take us very many class periods to get through the book of Titus, and then we'll be getting to 2 Timothy. But we're going to start Sunday talking about this letter to Titus and some of the things that Paul emphasizes in it. Well, we got about 5 minutes left. Wow. And I'm, you know, basically done. We maybe look at a couple of other things. So what questions or thoughts do you have as we kind of wrap up thinking about Titus and his history with Paul and the circumstances of writing this letter?
I think it kind of shows Titus's commitment to wanting to do right, even though it was misdirected, and getting circumcised in the very beginning. That takes a lot of commitment.
Okay. All right. Well, remember now, Titus wasn't the one that got circumcised, though.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
That was in Galatians, too.
Yeah, no, Titus wasn't. Yeah, that's what Paul emphasized.
What did he say got caught up in that?
Oh, you're thinking of, are you thinking about Barnabas with the hypocrisy in Galatians 2?
No, where we just thought about, I read it earlier. Yeah.
Maybe Scott's got a different translation. Let's see. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that.
As Galatians 2 verse 3 talks about Titus, even though he was a Greek, he's the target he's the target for these Judaizers who want people to be circumcised, but he says he was not compelled to be circumcised in verse 3.
Let me read you what the New King
says. Okay, all right.
Yet not even Titus, who was with me, being a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised.
Okay, yeah.
I get it now.
Yeah, yeah. I can see. Okay, all right. Yeah. No, I can see why you did. Yeah.
Forget
yeah.
what I said.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Apply all his comments to
Abraham. Okay, there you go. There you go. Good idea.
Never mind.
No, that's all right.
It does speak to the trustworthiness of Titus to have that level of responsibility on him and he has proven himself with that with the Corinthian brethren, and then now to be a part of going through the island of Crete there to take care of additional, he was a responsible person.
Yeah, yeah. Good point. Barry?
Young evangelists that are with Paul all the time, kind of an entourage that he uses to help with the work and sends them to different places to do, you know, what needs to be done. But to be part of Paul's inner circle is, you know, kind of an interesting thought.
Yeah, I mean, as we look back on that, we really think of, wow, what would that have been like? You raise something interesting. Paul is very interested in making sure that there are other people to preach the gospel. Because Paul, I think Paul recognizes he's not going to be around indefinitely. And so he is, and at least in the case of Timothy and Titus, and maybe some of the other names that are mentioned were also younger men relative to Paul anyway. He wants to make sure there's another generation of men to preach the gospel in these locations where the gospel has taken hold, but it's new, and he needs people who are ready to do that. And again, it speaks to the level of confidence that not just Paul, but God had in Timothy and in Titus in putting them in these situations. Well, we'll start Sunday talking about Titus's work with these churches on the island of Crete. What was going on there? What does Paul talk to him about? What he needs to do? What he needs to teach? Gary.
I think it's just wonderful to read about Titus and Paul leaving him in Crete to set some things in order to make a point of color. That's a huge responsibility.
Sure. Yeah.
But he was well trained and he knew what he had to do and he stayed where he committed.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to give you the last word because that's a great way to end tonight. Thanks for all your comments tonight, and we'll pick up with Titus 1 on Sunday.